We're in the middle of Shiras Devoiro. Before we start, I saw something very interesting this week that's relevant to the beginning of the Shira. Last week, we worked out what's with the woman singing in front of a big crowd. It says, Atosha Devoiro Baruch Ben Avinoya. So last week we explained, based on the general understanding of the Mephoshim, that the Devoiro did not actually sing. That's why the wording in the pasuk is very interesting. It's unusual. Vatosha Dvoiro Baruch Ben Avinoyam. Dvoiro sang and Baruch Ben Avinoyam. It's not said in the plural and it's said in the feminine. It's said in a singular female tense. She sang by herself. And also Baruch Ben Avinoyam. So the Mephoshim basically said it's right. She sang by herself and he represented her. But I saw something very interesting this week, which I already drew on in the Brachas Shir. I took advantage. But I saw it bought from the Chida, who says that no, she actually sang. She sang for everybody. How could that be? So said something very interesting. At that point, as we've seen, the events of the war with Sisera was something that, again, we've seen Chazal mamish put it on the caliber of some of the greatest miracles Klal Yisrael ever experienced. Chazal put it up there with Kriyas Yamsuf, the sun stopping for Yeshua, and other such events. So the feeling of the Jews after that happened was mamish the same as when they came out of Kriyas Yamsuf. The inspiration was so charged, and the awe of what they had just witnessed was so high that there was no problem of anybody coming to the wrong thoughts or feelings by hearing a woman sing, and therefore it was perfectly okay. It wouldn't have any effect on anybody. That's something that the Chida cites. I thought I'd share it before we move on. Okay. Right, so again, it's possible that the women were kind of a little bit further away, I don't know. But yes, the Mephoshim will say it about that too. Okay, we're going to continue now from Perek Hey, Pasuk Tes. Up till now, Devoiro had been giving the background, in her Shira she had been giving the background of what was going on. The problems that had been up till then, the background behind the problems. Now she's moving on to address the events in a bit more of a direct way. So she starts by saying, Libi lechoikike Yisrael hamisnadvim ba'am baruchu Hashem. My heart is with the wise men of Klal Yisrael, the teachers of Klal Yisrael, who dedicated themselves to circling among the people and teaching them to praise Hashem, to bless Hashem. This is what she's saying in the context of the victory they had just won. So again, what she's doing here is reiterating something she keeps reiterating, and that really the Kisvei HaKodesh keep reiterating. We saw a battle here. Let's remember what the true cause of a battle is. The true cause of the battle is, you know, when you see a battle, you're taken by the heroism that you see. What heroism was she taken by? She was taken by the cause. What actually happened? What happened? Before the battle took place, how was the battle made possible? Because there were teachers, there were people who were dedicated themselves to inspiring Klal Yisrael. The tzara started, the problem started, because there was a slackening. And she had colleagues who were busy with her, trying to spread inspiration. By trying to get people to higher levels, trying to get people to tshuva. So she says, these are the heroes of this story. These are the heroes of this story. That's always the challenge. To remain connected with the spiritual cause and not just to be taken with the material level of it. See, commandos, elite forces, heroes, right? And then you say, no, it's really the ones who are sitting and learning. Okay. We know, but has to be reiterated because it's hard to retain that attunement to the spiritual level when what we're dealing with and facing and living with the whole time is the material level of things. So she reiterates that. And now she moves on to discuss the effects of what happened now. Those who ride white donkeys, Yeshvei al midin, those who sit in judgment, Ve'olchei al derech, and those traveling on the roads, Sichu, talk about this. What's she saying? So she's talking about three people. The people who ride on white donkeys, they need to talk about it. Don't worry about the people on gray donkeys. People on white donkeys. What's this? People on white donkeys denotes aristocracy. White donkey is apparently a reference. In general, horses denoted aristocracy, a horse as opposed to a donkey. But apparently a white donkey was also a simon at least of affluence, a person with status. She's saying the people with status, she's now mamish breaking down all the different benefits that they got out of this war into fine details. The people with status, the rich people, the affluent, during the period of persecution had to be especially apprehensive because they were targeted. They were targeted. And therefore she's making note of this. She's saying, look, this is changing now. A person can be prestigious, a person can be aristocratic, a person can be affluent now, comfortably, without worrying. These are people whose lives, the quality of their lives is going to change now. They have to remember to talk about this. Yeshvei al midin, those who sit in judgment, same thing. The public figures were targeted. The judges, the teachers, they had to lie low during this reign of terror under Sisera. Now they again can come out into the open and do their things. So therefore, they also have to make sure to keep talking about this. Talk about the mace. The whole Chal Derech, just the most simple level. As we said before, Jews couldn't travel the open roads during those times. Now all of a sudden the roads are open again. Anybody traveling the road, realize, remember the blessing. See, it's a challenge. It's a challenge in these types of situations. Like a simple example from ourselves. You ever suffered from a really bad toothache for a couple of days? When you wake up the next morning and your tooth is fine and you're able to function again, you enjoy it. I'll give a more recent example, something I just experienced this week. It was fun to eat breakfast on Wednesday morning. Right? It wasn't easy to skip breakfast on Tuesday. Right? But you go through something tough, you go through something rough, changes, you enjoy it for half hour. Right? Then you settle back into life and it's no fun anymore. Oh, believe me, it's a lot of fun. Did you ever have one of those really bad toothaches that just completely knocks you out? Now you don't feel anything. Isn't that great? You don't feel anything. Life went back to good old boring. Isn't that great? The challenge with these things is, this is one of the big challenges, for you to be able to maintain that feeling, the feeling of relief, the feeling of what we call harchava. Oh, but now I got a new lease on life. New lease on life can be on very many different levels. A person who's cured from a very serious illness, or yeah, a person who's cured from a toothache can also feel a new lease on life. And the question is, the great person will be able to retain that feeling even months later. So that's what she's saying here. You're going to be traveling the open roads again. You're going to be going about business openly again. Don't forget about it and get used to it after a week. When you're on the roads, remember, these open roads were closed for a long time. Right? People who wanted to make journeys had to take these, sneak through the forests. Now you just take the open road straight. Remember that. And she says, remember what it was like. Mikol mechatzitzim. Remember how in last week, right? This was something that was very sudden. They had this battle and all of a sudden the superpower was defeated. All of a sudden all the dynamics in Eretz Yisrael changed. Remember how last week or 2 days ago when he wanted to go out to draw water? Again, we learned that the Jews had to gather themselves into the fortified cities. They couldn't live in open cities anymore. What did they do when they had to draw water? It was a secret clandestine operation. Is that how you pronounce it? Oh, I'm okay. Clandestine. It was a secret, a clandestine operation. It's a chashuv word. I'm not getting up on it so fast. A clandestine operation to sneak out of the cities and draw water. Now, when they would go, it was terrifying to go draw water. They crunched over the pebbles. Right near water is usually like a crunchy area. When your feet crunch when they walk. They were so apprehensive that they were trying to be as quiet as they can. So she's noting all the subtle feelings. This is like in other words. They were trying to be as quiet as they can, and they were, you know, terrified with each crunch as their feet walked. Mikol michatzitzim bein mashabim. From the sound of the crunching under their feet as they went to draw water. They're always scared that they're going to be ambushed. People were shot at with arrows as they were busy drawing water. Apparently it was a known phenomenon. Drawing water was a big issue. It was a secret operation that was very scary. And she's saying, remember that situation. Don't just forget about it. Now that things are comfortable, remember that. Shom yisanu tzidkais Hashem. But now you go out to draw water next week. Remember how you used to be so frightened of the twigs you broke when you walked. And then when you go to draw water, express the greatness of Hashem. Tzidkais pir zaynei b'Yisrael. The greatness that he did, righteousness that he did with Klal Yisrael, and the fact that now once again they're living in the open. Oz yodu l'sha'orim am Hashem. Whereas previously they all had to flee into the walled areas. Now, she continues and she says, Uri, Uri Devaira. Okay, now before we move on, the theme of these last two psukim, these last few psukim, is once again a most fundamental theme that has to be hammered in as much as we can. Appreciation of our comforts, appreciation of the tzaris we don't have. Draw on tzaris you did have. Minor tzaris, major tzaris. A most fundamental aspect of eating the maror on Pesach is because we're supposed to remember the bitterness. We weren't there, but at least to picture it. Did we ever feel ecstatic over the fact that we're free men? That you can wake up and you decide what you're going to do with your day? Eat maror on Pesach. Realize that it could be very different. And that's what she's trying to drive home here. This is really a fundamental function that's relevant to everybody all the time. To be enjoying boring life. To realize how different things could be. Hold on to it. Don't just settle into it and take it for granted. Rabbi Victor Miller. One time one of his grandchildren heard him benching. And he was saying with a lot of kavanah, Hashem, please relieve us of our tzaris. He said it with a lot of feeling. His grandson asked him afterwards, he said, I saw you put a lot, looked like he was thinking of something specific. He said, What big tzaris do you have? He said to his grandfather. So he said, I'm davening that Hashem should save me from all the tzaris I don't have. That's what he said. But this is very serious. This is the way he lived his life. He said with fa'enu. Well, now I'm okay, so I don't really need this right now. No. Think of all the different people with all the different situations. People like you suddenly discovered something. Healthy is not automatic. Healthy is because someone with a capital S is making you healthy. Acknowledge that and refa'enu and say, Hashem, wow, you skipped over me until today. You hit other people in the neighborhood, right? Please continue to do so. Note your fortunate situation. Now, we move on. Pasuk Yudbeis, Uri, Uri Devaira. Awake, awake Devaira. Uri, Uri Dabrishir. Wake up and speak song. Kum Barak Ben Avinayim. Kum Barak, get up, arise Barak. Ushvei Shev Yachor Ben Avinayim. And go capture your captives. Ben Avinayim. So she's urging herself to wake up and stay song. And she's urging Barak to energetically go about capturing captives. What she's saying here, Chazal tell us, we already mentioned last week, that she had a slip of tongue. She said, back in the days of Shamgar ben Anas, things became very bad. Until I arose as a mother of Klal Yisrael. Right? Now we merited this great salvation. So Chazal say, that was a bit of a conceited way of expressing herself toward the previous shayftim. And therefore, on her great level, she suddenly had a drop. She was in the middle of prophesying here, right? This whole shira is nevuah. All of a sudden, she felt herself losing it. She felt herself losing her connection, the prophetic connection. And she, this was expressed in her suddenly saying, Uli, Uli, Dvayra, wake up! Wake up, Dvayra! She was trying to get it back. She got it back. It was a fleeting little thing. She lost touch for a minute, and she recontacted, but Chazal say, that was a message. That was a message. She expressed herself in an inappropriate way, and therefore, for a moment, the Nevuah left her. Now, I have to note something very interesting here, because not quite what's going on. If you remember last week we said how she was on so great a level of having completely negated any sense of ego, that when she said the word Anoichi, when she said me, that was mamish kiviyachol, as though Hashem was expressing himself through her mouth. We're talking about a woman who basically had no ego. What do we say mean here? Oh, that's what we're getting at. So what do we mean here when we say that there was conceit? She expressed herself in a conceited way. So Alto Kelm says something very amazing. He notes that there's something very similar said also about someone who is known particularly for his anava, Hillel. Had a very similar incident with Hillel, where he said he became with the Ben Beseira. What happened? He came when he first came to Eretz Yisrael, the Bnei Beseira were the people in charge. And then a question came up regarding the Korban Pesach. Nobody knew the answer. Hillel gave the answer. And the Bnei Beseira said, if so, they got up, you sit down, he became the Nasi, and from then on, the Nasius was in his family. So he said, at one point, he said, what was it that made me the Nasi instead of you? The fact that I, very diligently and conscientiously, maximized my time of study of the Shema and Naftali, and he knew he didn't take advantage. So Chazal say that there also, he forgot a certain halacha because of that. Hillel was also known for his immense humility. The pshat in both of these things, the Alter of Kelm says, was that, no, there wasn't any conceit being expressed there. In Hillel's case, he was sincerely conveying mussar that needed to be given. And in the virus case, she was so detached from it that it was completely technical. She wasn't trying to put herself up. She was simply describing what had happened. But yet, the expression used, the choice of words, were words that can give a conceited impression. And words can have an effect on the person himself. One minute. Words can have an effect on the person himself. And a person at that level is taken to task for such a thing. Meaning, this is a very hush of a point, but I want to drive home here. Sometimes we have to realize that the way we express ourselves affects us. Sometimes a person thinks, like Tzunis, for example, right? I might make a joke about something and think that it's just comic relief. Something serious. I make a joke about it. Comic relief. I don't really mean to put it down. Of course I consider it hush. But I'm putting it into a humorous light. No. You have to realize that besides the fact that words express what you're feeling inside, in which case, yes, it's possible that you might say something that's just not really expressive. Words also affect your inside. You have to be careful. When you express yourself a certain way, yes, you're expressing yourself in a comical way about something can cause you to start relating to it more lightly, be on a very subtle level. And other such things also. For example, it can be on a lot of things. A person talks about things. Let's say Averis. I once saw this with a buck. He was talking theoretically about, there was a guy who was struggling, and he was talking theoretically about going and doing something. I don't want to get into the particulars. So let's say I wanted to go to a billiard room. Okay, I'll just use that as an example. Go to a billiard room. So he was talking to me about, I was dealing with this guy, and he was talking to me about what would happen if I would go to a billiard room. Not that I'm really thinking of it, but would it really be so bad? He was really going on and on about this billiard room, and it was clear that the guy was actually developing a frame of reference. by speaking about it. In which it becomes a little more and a little more and a little more of a reality until it's something you can actually do. And therefore, here, she said something that the truth is she didn't. It wasn't meant the way it sounded in any way. But yet, at the end of the day, she said something that could, in a subtle way, since it has that sound, since it has that expression, she was expected to keep careful even of such things, to keep completely clean, even of an expression that can have that effect. Okay.
Is she seeing her own message, or is this like a prophecy that she's kind of like getting in faith?
Both. Meaning the way it worked with the Nevuahs all the time was that they had certain visions or even certain words, but the articulation was their own. In some cases not. Moshe Rabbeinu was Shina Medaberes Mitzvah Groyne, with Hashem talking from his mouth. The Torah is not Moshe's choice of words. Well, with other Nevi'im, it was actually Nevi'im, because that's why, for example, Bilam, right? He had the most amazing prophecy about the Jewish people, yet Chazal read all kinds of negative intents into the things he said. Because the Maisa, it was coming through a Bilam. Okay. Now we move on. But now let's note another point in this puzzle. Okay, she said, awake, awake, Devaira. But also, we see a certain contrast here. She says, my job is to awake and say song. Barak's job is to capture captives. See, also, the Mepharshim basically say that this defined what the war was about. She was the battery of the war. If her song, she was trying to intensify her own efforts, because she said, the more intense my song is going to be, the more successful Barak is going to be in capturing captives. There's always that consciousness. There's always that consciousness that requires effort to maintain. That don't just focus on the material level of what's going on and lose sight of the spiritual underlyings. And that's why she's saying here also, I better make sure to intensify my song, because that's really the battery behind Barak's success here. Now, what was the success? Mr. Malbin knows. It doesn't say, you know, win the battle. It doesn't say capture your captives. This again is bringing home the point that there really was not much for Barak to do. There wasn't fighting going on here, as we already seen. Hashem did the fighting. He basically came and just tore apart the army of Sisera. All that was there for Barak to do was to run along and clean up the mess. Kill those who needed to be killed and capture those who needed to be captured. Other than that, there wasn't really much going on. Okay. Now, Oz Yirad Sorid La'adirim Ba'am. Hashem Yirad Bagibarim. So that she's saying now, but now she's referring back to what she had been saying during the war. She was busy with Tefillah and Shevach the whole time. Now, Oz Yirad Sorid La'adirim Am La'adirim Am Hashem Yirad Li Bagibarim. So, we give two interpretations of this pasuk. First is the general interpretation of the Mefarshim, Rashi, etc. And then we'll give the Malbim. Hashem will cause the survivors to subjugate the mighty. Hashem will subjugate the mighty for me. Meaning as follows, again, the Jews were a ragtag bunch. She kind of calls them survivors. A ragtag bunch. Right? We'll see something we've already described, and we'll see it described again soon. Was a bunch of school teachers, a bunch of yeshiva bachrin, who basically went out, a motley group, went out to take on a superpower. A well-oiled, huge, massive army. And they defeated them. Basically, the Cheshbon comes out that there was about four units to each man. Four units to each man. But whatever
four
it is...
Of 40 units of them.
But, yeah. 40 units of well-trained... of the strongest, well-trained army.
Where's the problem that they were teachers or rulers?
Soon we'll see. Soon. What's that? A few thousand. Thousands, we'll say. We're talking about something completely miraculous. So, therefore, she's saying, yes, Hashem will cause these little puny survivors, right, to subjugate the mighty. But the Malbim gives a different take on this pasuk. I want to read it again. Oz, Yirad Sorid La'adirim Am. The Malbim, as usual, goes very literal, noting the exact phrasing of the pasuk. He reads as follows: Then Yirad Sorid La'Adirim Ba'am. The survivor was subjugated by the mighty of the nation. Hashem Yirad Li Bagibarim. Whereas Hashem subjugated for me the mighty. Meaning what she's doing here is as follows. She's bringing out the greatness of this miracle relative to earlier times. Said in earlier times, there were wars. There was Othniel ben Kenaz. There was Ehud ben Gera. What happened at the time of Ehud ben Gera, for example? Ehud ben Gera did his assassination. Then what happened? Bedlam broke loose. He had good chevra waiting back in Eretz Yisrael. They cut off the connection between Moab and Eretz Yisrael. And then he came with mighty Jewish warriors, and they were able to wipe out the surviving Moabim in Eretz Yisrael. So certainly there was a great Yeshua then, but it made sense. It made sense. Othniel ben Kenaz also led an army. It wasn't an organized army, but at the end of the day, there was good fighting going on. Just whereas here it was a completely different story. Then you had mighty people, the mighty of the Jews, subjugating the survivors. Made sense. Here, it was a puny bunch, a ragtag bunch, being subjugated by the mighty. Here it was just clearly Yad Hashem in the most open way. It was different than all the other wars. This was just completely open miracle. Now, Min Yefraim Shoshom Ba'amolek. Yes, and she talks about the original wars. She says, she goes through a little bit the chronology of the wars. She says, already back in the earlier times, Ephraim began destroying Amalek. Who was the first one to fight Amalek? Yeshua ben Nun, back in the days of Moshe. Acharecho Binyamin ba'amamecho. Who finished the job? Binyamin. Shaul HaMelech. She's prophesying for the future. And now she says, and in the meanwhile, from Machir, that's a family of Menashe, came down Mechoikikim, came down teachers. Umizvulun Moshchim b'Shevet Sofer. And from Shevet Zvulun came forth who to fight? Those who schlepped pens, scribes. Here she's describing the army. The army was school teachers from Machir, the family of Menashe, Torah scholars, not warriors, and scribes from Shevet Zvul. This is who her wars was. And that's what I meant when I kept on saying people came out waving pencils instead of swords. This is what was going on. They weren't armed, they weren't trained, they weren't warriors, and they weren't many. It was a small handful. This Sarai b'Yisachar in Devairah. And yes, I have many great officers. What does great officers mean? Also, in this context, it means Torah officers. These were the virus allies. She referred to them earlier, the colleagues, her chizuk movement, her kiruv movement, the people that she worked with to spread the inspiration around Klal Yisrael. Yisachar King Barak, and these people, yes, my friends, the darshanim, right, the ones who were going around teaching along with me, they also joined the ranks of Barak. Be'emek Shulach Biraglov. And they went to do Barak's missions by foot. And again, what happened? Barak said, Raboisai, we have a massive, the U.S. Army here. We have to go fight them. Who's coming? So the Rebbe's from the yeshivas were coming, right? But they came with their jackets and hats and their scraggly beards. And they said, oh, we're here. And he was sending them. They were running around by foot, taking care of different things by foot. There was nobody on horses. We're talking about a real yeshivish army, right? Very unimpressive, militarily. And now we move on to the uncomfortable part of the war. Let's remember that there were dynamics here. As we said, and here this is, I'm introducing now a very, very penetrating part of what the virus is about to do. Because up till now it was all nice. And now the virus is going to get very sharp. I want to go back to put the whole war into perspective. Let's remember, how many people were with her fighting? 10,000 to 40,000. Right? Which means Hashem had said, I want to see a leap of faith. I want 10,000 people to dedicate themselves to go out against this massive army. Others joined. People joined as it was going on. but many did not. Devarah did not hold authority. And therefore, it was an issue of faith, loyalty. People were willing to take it at her word and join her. There were many of the smarter ones, of the less naive, of the more suave, is that how you say it? Who did not join. And now she's going to turn to address them. Reuven's divisiveness is very disillusioned. The flago is Reuven. The Reuven kept apart. Gedolim chikikele was very disillusioned. She says as follows: what was going on? Lama yoshavto bein hamishpatayim. Why were you sitting right at the edge of the battlefield? Lishmaya shrikoi sadon. To hear the calls of the flocks, meaning the calls of the masses. They were listening to the battle. They were following the battle. They didn't join. The flagos Reuven gedolim chikrelev. Yes, in order to justify what Reuven did, you need a lot of thought. What happened was as follows, Rashi says. Again, they were the skeptical. Who said, yes, the Devorah has, you know, there's some woman out there preaching, right? And she's got some chassidim who are all excited about her, an idealistic, naive bunch. And she actually managed to get the Mishugoyim out to war. They know what she's up against. They know what they're up against. They're not the types to be drawn after some emotional woman who got excited, right? They know, right? They were polished. What did they do? They understood that she's messing with Sisera, she's nuts, right? They didn't want to lose his favor. So therefore, they were sitting at the edge of the battleground, and should Sisera win, they were ready to like kind of see where the winds were heading, and if Sisera would win, they'd kind of come out, you know, the mature, cultured bunch and say, of course, Sisera, this is ridiculous, come, we'll help you get rid of these troublemakers, and get them back home. She attacks them. She says, you folks were sitting at the edge of the battlefield wanting to follow the battle, and then you decide where you join. Right? Would you join your brethren? Right? Like the little red hen, right? Remember the story of the little red hen? Would you join your brethren if you see them winning? Otherwise, you'll be there with Sisera and these unruly nuts don't really represent all the Jews, and you know, we'll just get them home and that's that. So,
Devorah, let's say the fact that she relied on it, wouldn't that be a problem with her relying on Nais?
She was. It was all prophecy. Hashem gave the word. So now she says, but the Mefarshim take this further. They say, "Lama yashavta bein hamishpatayim." She says, "Now you might come and say, Reuven, no, we were scared. We were just scared. There wasn't any." Don't have tightness on us. Yes, we very much admire the ones who joined the battle, but we were scared. She says, you were scared. Which inheritance did you choose in the first place? Which estate? Reuven chose the Transjordan. Transjordan was the most vulnerable place. They chose to be at the front, on the border, right shoulder to shoulder with the neighboring nations. Why did you choose to be there? Why weren't you scared then? So it says, Lishmaya Shrikoi Sadorin. This is already the Metzudas and the Malbim. So Lishmaya Shrikoi Sadorin. Oh no, then you were very brave. Why were you very brave? Because it was good for your livestock. Right? It's profitable. You're willing to stick your neck out. You're willing to be in a dangerous place because you wanted to have a good situation for your livestock. Now you couldn't come. Now all of a sudden you're scared. The fear might be justifiable. I might not have tinnitus. We might say yes, it required a certain level of heroism. But we saw you being very brave for your bank account. And all of a sudden now you're scared. This is something scary. You have to note this. Because this is something the Bali Musas say, that all of us, this is a very standard time in the Olam HaEmes. Person says, it was too hard for me to XYZ. It was too cold. I couldn't get out to Minyan that day. It was too cold. I was too tired. If it was too cold, you were too tired. How about the other day when it was the shaila of being moiser nefesh to get to your cousin's bris in Connecticut? Right? You slept yourself out of bed and you went out into the cold and you took 3 trains. What happened then? You establish your own standards. Yes. Tired, scared, cold, sick. All of these things might be excuses, but we have to check your record. If this is this level of scaredness, really, does it stop you from doing things? Let's see. So you have to realize, before taking an excuse, you have to make sure you're consistent. Because this will be thrown back at you. This is what the Nevuah was doing here. She's throwing back at them. You were scared. Where are you living? What for? For your livestock, you do it. But not for Hashem's honor. And now, she continues the castigation. You were scared, huh? Gilad be'eva ayarden shocham. Gilad also lived on the other side of the Yarden. And yet, they came running. They did come. Why couldn't you come? Gilad was one of the Shvatim of Menashe. So don't say you were scared. Don't say you were too far. It wasn't practical. Right? Oh, we knew you would win. It was going to take some time. Gilad came. They were just this far. There are no excuses. She basically closes off the excuses from every possible angle. Don lama yagur ani yois. This also gives us a picture of quite how dangerous what was going on was. You know where Don was? Okay, Reuben was sitting at the edge of the battlefield trying to figure out what's going on. You know where Don was? They were on the road. They had packed into ships and were heading out. They said, this is bad news. Don lama yagur ani yois. Why is Don dwelling in ships? Asher yoshav lechoy famim v'al mifratzov yishkoin. Now Asher also did not join the war. Why? Asher also lived in a vulnerable place. They lived in a place that was on the border. And Asher said that they could not come to join the war because they have to defend that front. So they didn't come either. So this is very interesting. The Vayera says, Asher yashav l'choyf yamim v'am yifratzav yishkoy. Asher is okay. Asher, they live on the beach, they stay there. They live on exposed areas, they had to stay there. In other words, there were a bunch of shvatim. Different shvatim had different excuses. When you're not dealing with Nevuah, when you're not dealing with Olam HaEmes, you can have just as good an excuse as the next guy. You can convince yourself and you can convince everybody around you that you really couldn't, it was really justified, rationalized, etc. But then comes the uncomfortable moment. Whether it's an Olam HaEmes, or whether it's the Nevuah in this world that come and really made them squirm. And she went through the list. This excuse was for real. This excuse, which sounded just as good, was not. And she simply blasted it away and let everybody see right through it. Uncomfortable matzah. Zvulun. And now she turns to the other tribe. Zvulun am cheref nafshei lamus. Zvulun cast his life aside. Ah! The Naphtali al Meroime Soda. As the Naphtali, they just went right out to the exposed fields, ready to throw them, their lives away. They came on faith. So she's contrasting. Right? Tough situations come up. That's what separates the men from the boys. Or that's when you really start seeing who's who. When situations are trying, you see the people who will just act like, you know, they're just focused on their own interests, their own survival. They'll act like animals. And then you'll see the ones who will rise to the occasion and end up coming out head and shoulder above the others. Ba'u melachim nilchamu. Many kings came. Like we said, Sisera had a lot of allies. You have to realize what this was. This was the again, we said this collection of Rabbeim and school teachers and scribes against, you have to realize the magnitude, against the allied forces. Against the allied forces, that's what's going on here. He had allies from all the kings of the world. They came to join his campaign. Meaning, again, not this fight against Barak, that was something that happened in a very sudden way, but in general, in his whole campaign against Eretz Yisrael. He was allied with everyone. Oz milchamu malchi Knan b'tanach al mei Megiddo. When he actually went against Barak, he had all kinds of other kings from Knan camping from Tanach until mei Megiddo. I don't know the geographics here, but the point here is that she's describing the vast territory that the army was camped on, that they were taking up. Think of an area like cities. This is what they were up against. Betza kesef loylakachu. And they volunteered. They didn't even demand pay. They saw this as an important cause to get the Jewish people. So here also, the Mefarshim say, this is also directed back at Reuven. Shame on you! Look at all the goyim got together to fight the Jewish people for free! That puts you even to a worse light that you're sitting on the sideline. The goyim got together for free. You didn't come to join your brothers. They didn't even demand pay from Sisera. Now, okay, so these kings joined Sisera for free. So you know what Hashem did? Oh, Sisera, you have volunteer corps? I also have volunteer corps. Min Hashamayim nilchamu. From the heavens they fought. Hashem sent out his own volunteer troops. They came fighting from the heavens. No, we went through that. Min Hashamayim nilchamu. From the heavens they battled against Israel. Yeah, Hashem sent his own malachim. Like we saw before, this was not a war of Barak against the allies. And he had the allied troops, masses and masses and masses of many armies. And simply min Hashamayim, he came down and creamed them. Right? HaKoychavim im siloysa nilchamu im Sisera. The stars, as we've already discussed, they shifted about, they changed position to fight Sisera. We've already discussed a few times, Lamaisa, they base it on this pasuk, that the stars actually heated the chariots of the soldiers. This was part of the bedlam that Hashem imposed upon them. This is what we mean when he said that, you had their whole army, they were wearing armor, and they were in metal chariots. The stars came and heated them up to the extent that the mamish turned red hot, and the soldiers didn't know what was going on, and they jumped into the Kishon Creek to get away from it all, to cool off. Kishon Creek, we'll see soon, was a benign, friendly little creek. And all of a sudden, the Kishon Creek swelled, turned violent, and swept them away. What's that? They don't do that. It happened once. This was a very unique occurrence. Hashem made that our world very much operates according to the setup of the stars, however that works. And they shifted position. This is something that doesn't happen. All of the mechanics of the world switched. Everything changed. The atmosphere changed. Nachal Kishon Grofam. And then yes, the creek of Kishon swept them away. Nachal Ktumim Nachal Kishon. Kishon was an old time creek. Everybody knew Kishon. There was nothing to be scared of dipping into the Kishon. It was an old, familiar, benign, calm creek. All of a sudden, it went nuts. While at the same time, Tidrichi Nafshi Ois, while all this was going on, we simply walked across. So while it was busy violently sweeping away the army of Sisera, Barak and his people simply walked through the creek. And like we said before, were cleaning up. They were busy just killing. Az homuik vesus midaris daris abirov. And she gives one more description of what was going on there. The mud under the horses, right? We had the people with the armor and the chariots, but again, and Hashem is fighting these all kinds of other battle tactics. It boiled up the mud underneath the horses' feet, the hooves fell off, and the horses, it broke, their feet broke, and they were bouncing in the air. So, this also wasn't very conducive for a good fight. Okay, we'll stop here.